Welcome to this episode of the Reverse Alzheimer's Summit. I'm your host, Dr. Heather Sandison, and I'm excited to dig in to this really important topic with Trudy Scott today. She is the food and mood expert, and she's also a certified nutritionist who educates anxious individuals about nutritional solutions for anxiety. She's well known for her expertise in the use of targeted individual amino acids and other nutritional solutions for the social anxiety condition called polyuria and the harmful effects of benzodiazepines. Today, we're going to connect the dots between benzodiazepines or anti-anxiety medications and dementia. Trudy, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Dr. Sandison. It's a real pleasure to be here today.
Thank you. Thank you. So, you know, you are one of the few people, I feel like, who's not afraid to dive into the science around how harmful some of these medications can be for our brain. So can you tell us first about the work you do and a little bit about what we'll be covering today in terms of GABA and amino acids and then their relationship to the use of medications like benzodiazepines?
Yes. So I am really, really passionate about this topic because I had my own anxiety. In my late 30s, I started to get increasingly anxious and I had panic attacks and social anxiety. And I discovered this very powerful connection between what you eat and specific deficiencies and also toxins and a whole host of other. I had this perfect storm of gluten issues and heavy metals and hormone imbalances because I was going into perimenopause. But end of the story was I discovered the amino acids. GABA was amazing for me. Tryptophan for serotonin support was also fabulous. And I addressed all these underlying causes. And eventually my anxiety and panic attacks went away. And now my mission is to share this information because the amino acids, which we'll talk about today in the context of anxiety that we see in Alzheimer's, and then also a specific type of anxiety called sundowning syndrome, and how these amino acids can be very, very powerful. As you know, anxiety is very common in Alzheimer's, and some of the papers actually talk about anxiety being a prelude to Alzheimer's. And as you would probably agree with me, is that we've got similar underlying causes that are contributing to the anxiety and contributing to the Alzheimer's or dementia. You know, I described some of the root causes that I experience, and these are common root causes that affect, you know, so many different conditions. It doesn't really matter what the diagnosis is. If you've got those underlying triggers, they can cause Alzheimer's, they can cause anxiety without Alzheimer's, they can contribute to autism, they can contribute to, you know, other neurodegenerative diseases. So we've got to look for the root causes, but then there are these nutrients that we can use that can alleviate some of the symptoms while we're addressing some of those underlying root causes. Now, unfortunately, in the population that I work with, which is mostly women 30 and above, long-term use of benzodiazepines is very common. And it's very concerning to me because of the impacts, firstly, short-term impacts, which we'll talk about a little bit later, but also the long-term impacts when it comes to Alzheimer's and dementia. So I'm excited to tuck in and talk about these topics.
So dementia, Alzheimer's, and anxiety, also depression, they come together very frequently. And sometimes what we see is that people start to, you know, lose their short-term memory, lose their memory, and then they're depressed because they kind of see this path forward as being so hopeless. But also on the flip side, people who experience depression and anxiety earlier in life are at risk for dementia. And I think many of us feel that experience, we can relate to that experience of being anxious, overwhelmed, and feeling like our brains don't work. Stage fright is a classic example of this. And more often, especially in the last 10, 15, 20 years, we see that it's easy to just go to a doctor and get a prescription for a benzodiazepine. Will you share what those medications are, what we commonly hear them called? And you may not even realize that you've been prescribed a benzodiazepine because they're just that common.
Yes, I'd love to. I want to just start with some of the prevalence of anxiety in Alzheimer's disease, because you've given us a nice summary there. But it's 40% of those with Alzheimer's disease can have anxiety. And you talked about being depressed because you've got this diagnosis, but there's the biochemical aspect of it as well. So we've got the concern about the future, but then also we've got this underlying biochemical aspect. And there's a lot of literature on depression, as you mentioned, and Alzheimer's, but there's less literature on the prevalence of anxiety. And it's as you say, it's really, really common. And the concern also is that this particular paper that I pulled that I want you to mention, it's called A Relationship Between Anxiety and Alzheimer's Disease. They talk about the fact that the anxiety can actually make the dementia symptoms worse. So yeah, that's a problem. The other problem is the approach that is documented, and as you said, people go to the doctor, the approach is psychological support, behavioral management, and I don't like this term, the judicious use of psychiatric armamentarium of medication. So all they're talking about is therapy and medication. And they don't talk about the amino acids, which are very powerful, as I'll share in a second. So to your question about the benzodiazepines, for anyone who doesn't know what they are anti-anxiety medications that are prescribed for anxiety and panic attacks, also prescribed for pain, insomnia. And I'll just share a few of the common names that people may be familiar with: Ativan, Valium, Xanax, Klonopin, and they are meant to be used short term. So short term means 2 weeks. They're short term intervention for a critical situation. Unfortunately, they're used for many, many years. And we have issues with dependence, meaning more and more is needed. Dependence, meaning you can't live without them. Tolerance, meaning more and more is needed. And then withdrawal symptoms. And I'll just share a short, what I call a horror story from someone in my community who'd been on benzodiazepines for many, many years. She had actually tapered from the medication, and she'd been off the medications for about 17 months. And these are the symptoms that she's still experiencing: locked shoulder muscles, internal vibrations, headaches, jelly legs, distorted vision, floaters, feeling like my teeth are going to fall out, feeling like I've got this adrenaline or cortisol surge, my arms go numb, I'm pretty tortured every day. She'd been on 4 different benzodiazepines over the years. She'd been on Ambien and antidepressants, and she was initially prescribed the benzodiazepine for dizziness. So, it can be something as simple as dizziness, and then you can end up with all of these issues. So I'm just sharing this just for folks to get a feel for how serious the benzodiazepines can be outside of Alzheimer's. Unfortunately, a lot of doctors are not aware that these medications need to be tapered really, really, really slowly. And when I say slowly, I'm talking about years in some cases. And I do want to just say, for anyone who's listening now and hearing this, and if you are on a benzo, definitely don't stop cold turkey, because, some people think, oh my gosh, I need to get off this medication. They do need to be tapered really, really slowly. And as a nutritionist, I don't advise people in terms of quitting their medications. I'm always working in conjunction with their doctor. So I just wanted to, lay the groundwork for, generally speaking, the concerns with benzodiazepines. But I'd like to just share a little bit about a study that I pulled about the risk of dementia in long-term benzodiazepine users. But I just wanted to pause there and see if you had any questions about what I just talked about.
No, more validation. Really, I have a patient who, similar to someone in the person that you shared in your community, she's 18 months out from her last dose of benzos and still suffering from pretty extreme symptoms of withdrawal, and was started on benzodiazepines for anxiety associated with mold exposure. And it turned out that the benzo withdrawal has actually, and even being on the benzos, she had more symptoms from that itself than from the mold exposure and mold symptoms. And so it really created this bigger problem than she had going into getting those medications. But she was feeling desperate and needed relief. And that was, a well-intentioned provider started her on that. So I just appreciate you sharing that. And also, you know, reminding people that this is not something you can stop cold turkey. There's basically just a couple things that can kill you stopping cold turkey, and it's alcohol and benzos. So please do not do that. Get really good support from your from a trusted provider. There are people who specialize in this, in just getting people off of benzodiazepines. And so find someone who you can trust and who you can work very closely with to go through that process.
Thank you for sharing that. And yes, that's a common issue that I'm seeing all the time. So thanks for sharing that. And unfortunately, you know, she was desperate, and that's the situation a lot of people are in. They're desperate and they don't know about these alternatives. And I've had amazing success with clients who are dealing with mold anxiety, you know, anxiety increased because of the mold toxicity. And GABA, which we'll talk about a little bit later, is amazing for addressing that anxiety while you are dealing with the home remediation and getting rid of, you know, the toxic exposure that is causing these symptoms and everything else that's going on. So really important to be aware that there are these alternatives. And then just to go to your point about tapering and what I find is very beneficial for my clients who are tapering is to get as nutritionally stable as possible before you start to taper. So that means addressing, if you've got gluten issues, healing the gut, addressing your adrenals, using the amino acids like GABA and everything else. It just makes it so much easier because you've got all that nutritional support as well.
Fantastic. So go ahead.
Now I was going to talk about the dementia and long-term benzodiazepine use.
Please. Yeah, the risks associated, please.
Yeah. So this was a meta-analysis it was 10 studies, and it's a very recent study. And I will just share this first statement that they talk about in the paper. The paper is called The Risk of Dementia in Long-Term Benzodiazepine Users. And their first statement is what I have found as I've gone through individual studies, that there is conflicting evidence in the literature on the association between benzodiazepines and the risk of dementia. And I've looked at various different papers, and it's often the authors of the paper there may be a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. So there's that aspect. And then it may just be, you know, the fact that we have this biochemical individuality and not everyone is going to be affected. We talked about how harmful the benzodiazepines are outside of Alzheimer's. There's a third of people who manage to quit their benzos much more easily than another two-thirds. And of that two-thirds, you have a harder time. One third of them have a really, really hard time and the other not so bad. So there is this biochemical individuality that we see certainly tapering off benzos. So the fact that for some people it's going to increase dementia, it does make a lot of sense. But this paper was looking to see if there was a relationship, and they concluded that benzodiazepines significantly increase the risk of dementia in the elderly population. What was interesting with this paper is they found that using benzodiazepines for longer duration, greater than 3 years, was more problematic. And then they also found specific benzodiazepines with a longer half-life of greater than 20 years were more problematic. It's good that they've identified that, but I've seen in some papers where it can be across the board different, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean the benzodiazepines with a longer half-life. The other issue that we see outside of dementia is that benzodiazepines increase the risk of falls. So if we are using benzodiazepines in an older population, there's a higher risk of falls, which is obviously not a good thing in terms of, you know, hip fractures and things like that.
So we've established that it's harmful to have anxiety. A lot of anxiety and to not get sleep, right, is also harmful for the brain. And yet the kind of first thing that a medical doctor will often pull out of their tool belt to treat both insomnia and anxiety is a benzodiazepine. And we've established the risk associated with those, both in terms of falls and also in terms of predisposing people towards dementia if they're on them long term. And also, they're associated with amnesia. I mean, you don't forget, you don't remember what happened. So it's not always that you're actually getting better sleep. It's that you just don't remember that you got terrible sleep when you take an Ambien or something like that. So they don't work that well. They come with risk, but we still need to do something about the anxiety. So tell us what to do.
So I want to just talk about a specific type of anxiety that we see in Alzheimer's. It's called sundowning. It's in Alzheimer's and dementia. And I will just say that the work that I do with people with anxiety is the first thing I do is start with the amino acids because we get quick results. So if you've got low GABA, you will have the physical type of anxiety where you've got tension in your neck, you'll have stiff and tense muscles. And we use GABA, the amino acid GABA, to help relieve those symptoms. Then if you've got the low serotonin kind of anxiety, you'll have the worry, the ruminating, the reprocessing. Also, you'll have insomnia with both of those. And then the amino acid that I use in that case is tryptophan or 5-HTP. And we'll talk a little bit more about those in a second. So that's where I start with everyone that I work with. My focus in my practice is anxiety. So everyone who comes to see me does have anxiety. And that's what we do. We use the amino acids for quick relief. And when I say quick relief, we get results within 5 minutes. We use the amino acids sublingually and we'll feel, someone will be able to report back, yes, my anxiety went from a 10 out of 10 to like a 4 or 5 out of 10, or maybe even a 7 out of 10, then we know we need to increase the dose. So it's very individualized dosing of the amino acids and using a symptoms questionnaire to determine which one we're going to use. And often we'll use both. People often have low GABA and low serotonin. So I just wanted to set the stage there. So let me just talk about sundowning syndrome. And I haven't seen any literature that connects it to specifically using, there's no literature on the using amino acids in sundowning syndrome. But as I describe sundowning syndrome, you'll see that there's a lot of these overlapping symptoms that we have with low GABA and low serotonin. So I'll just read this definition from a case study that was published. It's that the term sundown syndrome or sundowning are used to describe a wide range of neuropsychiatric symptoms occurring in individuals with dementia in the late afternoon, evening, or night. These symptoms include confusion, restlessness, anxiety, agitation, aggression, pacing, wandering, screaming, yelling, and hallucinations. The treatment of sundown syndrome is challenging and pharmacological therapies are not particularly effective. So there again, we've got the fact that there isn't really medications that can help. Now, as soon as I read a description like this, I immediately think, okay, is there a role for serotonin or GABA support? So when I hear anxiety, restlessness, agitation, aggression, yelling, those are all classic low serotonin symptoms. Mm-hmm. So now I'm thinking, okay, let's consider tryptophan for addressing some of these symptoms. And then when I was looking into this, I dug a little bit deeper and we'll talk about the role of GABA as well. So these are all classic low serotonin. And that what I didn't mention earlier is that low serotonin symptoms get worse later in the afternoon and evening. So that's when we typically use tryptophan because as the serotonin dips towards the end of the day, that's when symptoms get worse. And as you heard in this, the sundowning syndrome is happening late afternoon and evening. That's why it's called sundowning syndrome.
So and I'm sure there are lots and lots of listeners right now who can fully relate to that description, who have experienced it, have loved ones who have experienced it, maybe their parent who's no longer with us. They remember going through that torture and trauma. And many of them might also add that it doesn't just happen in the afternoon. Sometimes it happens in the middle of the night and in the morning and all hours of the day. It's kind of like morning sickness for pregnant women until you have it. And you're like, no, it doesn't just happen in the morning. It happens all day long. So thank you for describing that. And I think many of you who are listening are like, okay, I'm in the right place. Tell me how we can get some relief, especially in a way that's effective. Because as you mentioned, the pharmaceuticals are not particularly effective. And things like Seroquel, the antipsychotics that get used often for that, they create this sort of numbing, like where the person is just gone. They have this sort of glazed over look. And if there's a way to avoid that and create some more peace and harmony and not have this awful sundowning experience for both the patient and for the person caring for them, that would just be a miracle.
Yes. And there is an amino acid that is a miracle. It really is. And when I talk about it, and I saw your face when I said, you get results so quickly, people can't actually believe it's as good as it is, but it really is, because you get quick results. And it addresses all of these symptoms. So with low serotonin, I'll just recap the symptoms. It's the mental worry, anxiety. And now it's hard when you're working with someone with dementia and Alzheimer's to actually know, is it mental or physical? So with you doing the trial of the amino acid, in this case we do tryptophan, you're going to need to see what kind of how they react, and you've got to have the confidence in using it with your parent or other loved one who's dealing with these symptoms. And I find that because I'm working mostly with women with anxiety, they have used the amino acids themselves, they feel confident, and then they use it with their mother or their father, whoever they're helping. Or you, as you said earlier, you've got to work with a practitioner who's going to help guide you here. But you look at the symptoms and you see, you could give them a rating, how bad is anxiety? It's a 9 out of 10. How restless are they? How much aggression? Often there's this anger and agitation, and the person who's the caretaker will say, they're not like this. This is not them. This is so atypical. This is just not the kind of person they are. And then I'm suddenly seeing this really, really different person. So rate the aggression. And then take note of when it happens. Is it happening in the afternoon and evening? And that's going to be a clue that it could be related to serotonin. And then we use the amino acid tryptophan or 5-HTP. Now, I like to start with tryptophan. Typical starting dose is 500 milligrams for an adult. For an older population, I would even start with half that, just to be safe, and just see what kind of response you're going to get. If you, the other thing that we see with the sundowning is being awake in the middle of the night. This can help with sleep as well. That's a classic low serotonin symptom. And then if you are seeing, yes, the agitation, the anger, the insomnia is improved a little bit, then we increase the dose until we find the ideal dose for that person. 5-HTP is another option. Some people do better on tryptophan, some do better on 5-HTP. The starting dose for 5-HTP is 50 milligrams. I would also start with half that and then see how the person does. Now, I wanted to just mention that description that I took, shared about sundowning syndrome actually came from a case study that was published about melatonin. And the paper was called Melatonin for Sundown Syndrome and Delirium and Dementia, Is It Effective? And it was an 81-year-old man with Alzheimer's. He had behavioral disturbances, sleep disorder, and wandering. And this doctor prescribed 2 milligrams of melatonin at 8 p.m., His sleep quality improved within a week, improvement in his behavior within 2 hours of taking the melatonin. And then they gave him additional 2 milligrams of melatonin, and his symptoms gradually improved over the next 2 weeks. And there were no behavioral changes in a 2-month follow-up. And I'm sharing this because tryptophan is used to make melatonin. So I will typically start with tryptophan or 5-HTP, and then if we still need help specifically with sleep, add in the melatonin. But as you can see from this case study, the melatonin also helped the behavioral symptoms and the sundowning syndrome. So it's amazing to think that something as simple as tryptophan or 5-HTP or melatonin or a combination of those can have such a big impact. And I know that Dr. Dale Bredesen reports using melatonin and tryptophan for sleep issues in Alzheimer's. I haven't actually heard him talk about sundowning. Does he talk about sundowning syndrome?
I think he's very familiar with it. I don't know that he's as in touch with it. You know, certainly with Marama, with us having the residential care facility, I see a ton of it because people are with us 24 hours a day. But I don't know that he specifically has any suggestions for that, other than he definitely cautions people around the Seroquel and the benzodiazepines.
Okay, great. Yeah, because I looked in his papers and I looked in his book and I couldn't see the word sundowning, but he's, you know, he's mentioning all the symptoms. But yeah, so anyway, that's great. And, you know, everyone knows how, you know, amazing Dr. Bredesen is. So if you are feeling concerned that there is not a lot of, you know, research published about using tryptophan or even using melatonin, you know, just feel comfortable that it is being used clinically. And sometimes we've got to make these extrapolations until we have as a study, you know, looking at sundowning in dementia and using tryptophan. So yeah, it's just exciting.
It's so nice when we're using something safe. Now, do you caution people if they're taking SSRIs? Or do you worry about serotonin syndrome with adding these supplements?
So there is a theoretical concern with serotonin syndrome. And for anyone who doesn't know what that is, it just means taking too many medication and a nutrient that is going to raise serotonin. And it is life-threatening. I always, because I'm a nutritionist, I'll have someone, if they, you know, if their parent or they are using an SSRI, serotonin selective reuptake inhibitor, let their physician know, the prescribing physician know, that they want to use tryptophan or 5-HTP. And then I have them use it 6 hours apart. So often they'll be using their antidepressant in the evening. And now we want to use tryptophan or 5-HTP in the evening because that's when it's most effective. Switch their antidepressant to the morning with the doctor's approval and then use them 6 hours apart. Now that's a very cautious way of using with antidepressants. I won't recommend using tryptophan or 5-HTP if someone's on multiple antidepressants, only if they're on one and then the doctor's given their approval. But I will share, Dr. Sanderson, that there is no research showing that combining tryptophan or 5-HTP with an antidepressant causes serotonin syndrome. And there's actually a few papers where I think there are two papers where they were actually studying SSRI and they added in tryptophan and they added in 5-HTP to make it more effective. So they are used at the same time, but yeah, we just want to err on the side of caution. And I know, you know, I'm all about empowering my clients, and a lot of people read my book and they get stuck into the amino acids and the dietary changes on their own. So I just like to have that precaution as well for people who are going to just try and do it on their own.
I love it. Okay. And then GABA is this other amino acid that's very powerful. How do you recommend people use that?
So as I mentioned earlier, with low serotonin, it's the worry, the ruminating, the mental, obsessing kind of behaviors. With GABA, it's physical. So they'll feel it in their neck. They'll feel stiff and tense muscles. Certainly with my population, if you've got low GABA kind of anxiety, you'll be drawn to stress eating, or you'll use alcohol in order to relax, to wind down at the end of the day. And GABA, the amino acid GABA, gamma aminobutyric acid, can be used to raise GABA levels. And certainly, there is a role of for GABA in Alzheimer's disease. This paper called Implications of GABAergic Neurotransmission in Alzheimer's Disease talks about glutamine and GABA and how these have this balancing effect. Glutamine's excitatory, GABA is calming and inhibitory. And they talk about that there's abundant data implicating this GABA glutamine balance in disease progression. So we know that there is a role for GABA in Alzheimer's disease. There are no studies using GABA in Alzheimer's or dementia. And that's just the nature of the game. There's fewer studies on these amino acids, unfortunately. But we know that GABA helps with anxiety, it helps with disturbed sleep, helps with restlessness, helps with stiff and tense muscles. So if you've got a loved one or you're caring for someone with Alzheimer's and they're not sleeping well, it could be low serotonin and a need for tryptophan or 5-HTP or melatonin, but there could also be a low GABA component, and there often is. So we would look at those symptoms like we talked about earlier, and rate them. And if we're doing a trial of both serotonin support and GABA support, it's best to do one at a time. Then you're going to know what the effects are. So if you choose to support serotonin with tryptophan first, find a baseline, rate symptoms, improve until you're getting some resolution. Maybe you've still got some agitation, or maybe you've still got some sleep issues with the person. Then you would say, okay, now I'm going to try some GABA and see if that's going to work. You could choose to stop the serotonin support if you wanted to and just do the GABA on its own. That's fine as well. But usually when we've made some gains, we don't want to stop what we've already done. We want to layer on the additional support. The other thing that we sometimes see with GABA support is it helps with stress eating. So if your loved one is binging on carbs, the low serotonin can be a factor, and so can the low GABA. So we want to watch that as well. And then you'd mentioned you know, to how much sundowning you see in your community, and you know how common it is. I actually had a woman in my community share about how GABA helped her mom, and she was someone who had her own anxiety and had figured out how to use GABA, and GABA was helping her. So she felt comfortable trying this with her mom, and I'll just go ahead and share this. Her mom's 98. She said she'd been sundowning for a couple of years. And this was someone who actually commented on my blog, and then I did a whole new blog post about it. She said it starts around 3 p.m., sometimes earlier. Some days it's no big deal, but it's on those other days when she starts, and then she goes into anxiety, agitation, and she can sort of get defiant, which is not her. Remember I said that, you know, you don't recognize the person because this biochemistry is you know, hijacking their brain, so to speak. She said she's a gentle soul, friendly and kind. So this is difficult on her as well as our family. So it's difficult for the person who's going through this as well. So she felt comfortable using her pestle and mortar to crush up 125 milligrams of a GABA Calm supplement. This is an over-the-counter GABA product that I use with a lot of my clients. And she mixes it into her flavored yogurt when she starts to seeing her have difficulty. I give it to her throughout the day. So she's only getting 125 milligrams of GABA. It's a really, really low dose. And this is what I typically start my clients on. 125 milligrams a few times a day. What her mom was getting was just 125 milligrams for the whole day. And she says, I do notice it lessens her anxiety, and I hope this is going to continue to be helpful because it really is draining. Now, I actually responded to her and I said, this is great that you're seeing these results. Consider increasing to see if you're going to get even more results. And I also mentioned the serotonin connection because it was happening in the afternoon and evening. So this woman may have also benefited from serotonin support. But it's just very, you know, very encouraging and heartwarming to hear that something as simple as a little bit of GABA can make a difference, and, you know, sleeping better. She did mix it into her yogurt. We typically like to use the amino acids away from protein, so you're going to get better effects, but using it crushed and or a powder sublingually is the most effective way to use the amino acids. A lot of people will actually say GABA doesn't work. It doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier. It's a waste of time. I actually interviewed Dr. Karazian on one of my anxiety summits and talked about that specific topic because he's the one who came up with a GABA challenge to say, take a lot of GABA and see what kind of reaction you get. And it'll give you an indication as to whether you have a leaky blood-brain barrier. And he said it was just a theory. We don't have any evidence to support it. I would never have someone take a really high dose to start. It's just too much. And 125 milligrams sublingual away from protein is the way to start with GABA and then increase from there and see what kind of reactions you get.
I noticed that you mentioned glutamate and GABA and kind of that teeter-totter of excitatory and inhibitory neurotransmitters. And glutamine is something that I use commonly in my practice to help people with leaky gut. And I get the sense that some patients get more of an excitatory response and other patients get more of that inhibitory calming response from it. Do you have a sense of what makes the difference and who gets what and what's going on there? Is it, I know zinc and B6 and magnesium can help us make that conversion. Is it cofactors or what's going on there?
So I get the exact same response. So I'm always, if we use glutamine, I tell people some of it can convert to GABA and be calming. And of course, we know it helps with blood sugar stability as well. So it's giving you that calming benefit as well. And then it's healing the gut. So it's you're getting all of those benefits. But there are some people where it can convert to glutamate and be a little bit excitatory. So I just warn people that. And then, so that's always been what I've done. And then if it is too excitatory, then we stop having them use it and we use something else if we're using it for leaky gut. And I don't have any conclusive evidence, but I think it's got to do with one of the GAD polymorphisms. I think it's GAD67 polymorphism. And if that is expressing, it may go down a different pathway and be more excitatory. I have had some people talk about the fact that GABA can actually do that as well and convert back to glutamate. And I've seen no evidence in the research to support that. And I think when people take GABA and they get more anxious or they get agitated, it's because they're taking too high a dose. Mm-hmm. So you'll see, most GABA supplements will say take 2 capsules a day and it's a 500 milligram capsule or 750 milligram capsule, and that's way too much. So I always start low and then and increase from there.
Got it. That is so helpful and so specific. I mean, these are just such practical tips that can, I think, bring many people a lot of relief, not just the person suffering with Alzheimer's, but also the care partner who is under a ton of stress and maybe also struggling with sleep, also struggling with mood, because it's just an inherently stressful situation. And so I think these tools are so powerful for the person struggling with Alzheimer's, but also for that care partner to just find more joy in the privilege of being able to care for a loved one. Oh. There's so much potential. So many care partners, they say that when they get to the end of it, when it's over, they wouldn't give it up for anything. They're so grateful for that opportunity to care for their parent or their spouse. And yet the day-to-day can be really hard. And so finding these tools that make it a little easier, a little bit more joyful, a little bit less painful, it's just a huge, huge value.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because it is physically demanding, and if you can be in a good space in terms of having enough GABA levels, having enough serotonin, being able to sleep well, because your sleep is going to be disrupted, to feel calmer, you feel less overwhelmed because there's a lot going on while you are caring for someone. So that the amino acids are amazing, and in conjunction with adrenal support, obviously, it could be complex, and adrenal support and just taking care of yourself at the same time, I think it's so important. So I'm so glad you mentioned that.
Trudy, it's an absolute pleasure to talk with you. You're so well-informed and well-researched, and you clearly have a ton of experience in this space. I want to make sure that our listeners and audience members here know how to get a hold of you, find out more about your courses, your book, and everything that you have to offer.
Thanks, Dr. Sanderson. So my book, The Anti-Anxiety Food Solution, discusses the amino acids in detail throughout the book. There's a whole chapter on the amino acids. And as I said earlier, a lot of people pick it up and run with it. For others, if they need guidance, I have online programs where I walk people through how to use GABA and how to use the other amino acids. I also have practitioner training where I teach practitioners how to use the amino acids in their community. And then my blog, is very active. I get, as I said, this woman shared her success with her mom. The blog's very active, and I get a lot of comments and questions, and I get to learn from my community. It's amazing. I learn so much from the questions they ask and the stories they share. So I've got a very active community, and I'd love to, you know, have folks who resonate with this to join and learn more.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you. I can just say from my personal experience, it's very calming to talk to you.
Well,
thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure joining you. And I look forward to, you know, hearing the other interviews, learning from the other experts and sharing this with my community, because it's so needed. So thank you for doing.
Trudy, it's been an absolute pleasure having you. Thank you so much for joining us.